All right. Hello, everyone. So, yes, we are here tonight for 90 minutes to look at the Ellie Ruzdar audio from last year, which is nice because in 60 minutes, although the 60 minutes are very interesting, you know, we only get about 18 minutes or less into the audio. So tonight in 90 minutes, maybe we'll be able to get a little further into the audio. I think what I'm going to do, without further ado, since Ken just played a little song, I Am Light, I think what I will do is just get us started. So, Ken, do you want to go ahead and play the Ellie Ruzdar audio until I put up my hand? And the mic is yours. By the way, I am remembering to record. Okay.
I know you're not saying this, but I think there's an idea that gets in the mind that when we say 1% of the people are ready, the idea is they're better than me.
No, no. This is not what my intention was. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Let me make a simple example. This is a real life example. Okay. My son... Okay, let's go back. When my daughter was in middle school, she had to find an instrument to play. So she loved violin, so she started playing violin. And she played beautifully. Okay. When it came to my son, who is 5 years younger, he based on what his sister did and all that, and he chose also violin. Okay. But he didn't have the talent. Every day he came from the school, she said, "I hate violin. I hate violin." Every day. So, you know what? At the end of the week, I said, "You know, honey, you're not playing one. End of that. Put the violin in the case." I brought it back to the store. This was a rental one. It's gone. If you're not violin...
Wow, that was fast. I can't believe that you were able to see my hand and let go of the mic that quickly. That was really fast. Last week we talked about, again, how sometimes people feel that Ellie is somehow telling them that they're not ready for the spiritual path and so they should leave it. And again, underneath that is this feeling, I'm not good enough. And, of course, the I'm not good enough feeling is just coming from the I am bad belief. You know, many, many things are interpreted through that I am bad belief as long as that I am bad belief is in the mind. But the example that Ellie just gave is an excellent example because she loves both of her children. You know, she loves her daughter and she loves her son. And her daughter apparently played the violin, loved playing the violin, and probably played the violin fairly well. And the son didn't have any such calling, but he just kind of copied. Maybe the daughter, I guess, is older, so he just kind of copied the daughter. And he wasn't learning to play the violin well. And he's like, "I hate the violin." So Ellie says, "Well, then, let's quit playing the violin then. That's not for you." And I think she's really trying to tell us the same thing about the spiritual path. If you find that you really don't like contemplation and you don't like meditation, or that you don't like letting go of thinking you're right or whatever it is, she's just saying that it's not for you right now. Because the way that you would know it's for you right now is that you'd love it. Now, this doesn't mean that we don't experience resistance. There are certainly days when the thought crosses my mind that I don't want to meditate, for example. I have just learned to go and do it anyway. Because I have learned that that is just a temporary thought. And I have learned that once I sat down and closed my eyes and began meditating, that I am going to love it. So I just kind of get past the temporary thought and get into the activity that I know from experience that I love. And for many, many years, I think you guys, if you know me well enough, for many, many years I was focused on contemplation and I was focused on journaling. And I loved those activities. I loved them. And now it's meditation is more the primary for me. I still do the contemplation, but the meditation feels more primary. But I am here doing this because I love it, like Ellie's daughter loved the violin. And all she's saying is, if you don't love it, then go do what you love, because that's your calling. And there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, she would say, you know, God is just not wanting to wake up in that body right now. God wants to go ride bicycles in that body right now, or God wants to go start a new company in that body right now, or whatever it feels like that you love. I was with a friend a couple weeks ago who used to be quite focused on the spiritual path, and now I'd say she's mildly focused on the spiritual path. It's definitely not primary. And she's really focused on her career. But she's so excited about her career. She was telling me what all she's doing and all the people that it's helping. And you could just see the joy. I mean, and how it's spreading like wildfire, this thing she's creating. And you could just see the joy. You know, so that she's actually unknowingly, because she doesn't know Ellie, but she's following Ellie's advice. She is following her heart, and she's doing what she's called to do right now. And Ellie does not intend to say that those who are awakening, the 1% or the 3% or whatever who are really focused or awakening are better than the others. No, she says. That's just like, you know, my son didn't want to play the violin. That's that. You know, it doesn't mean that my daughter's better. And if you think about it, this is a really, really happy message. This is a message of freedom now. Right? We don't have to do something to become free. We can just be free now by following our heart. And if our heart happens to be bringing us into a depth of spirituality, that's perfect. But if our heart is bringing us into something else, that's perfect. You know, it's the follow your bliss. Right? Follow your bliss. Follow your heart, and you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. All right, Ken, I'm releasing the mic.
If you're not interested in playing the violin, no matter how much, if you don't have the talent for it, no matter how much you try, how much effort you put in, you're not going to be a violinist. So accept that. You need to accept that. This acceptance is liberation. People don't understand what I'm talking about. Accepting what liberation. Because trust me, I'm going to repeat myself. If you are not meant to be the truth seeker, when somebody points out to you the truth, your mind is not mature enough to recognize it. So therefore, it was ignored again. It would bounce back as an ego, and it functions in the world as an ego. And seeking again.
And there's not a thing you can do about it.
No.
Right.
You cannot do anything about that. But if your mind is mature and ready, and your desire is for the truth only, that is enough if somebody just points out. It happened to me. I have experience with a 23-year-old girl. From a long distance, she woke up the moment I just pointed out to the truth. She woke up right there and then. And she's awake. I talk to her at a regular basis. She's becoming a doctor, probably. She's Iranian.
Okay, and again, she's saying, you know, when she talks about the mature mind, it's the mind that really wants the truth just because it is the truth. Right, that's it. I just want to know the truth. I think, you know, I perceive that I meet people who want only the truth. But maybe that's not true. But maybe the wanting to want only truth is fairly strong. So what do you do about that if you want to want only truth? And that's strong, right? There are two answers that come to me. One answer, again, is to be engaged in the spiritual path in whatever way you genuinely love, if you want only truth. So, you know, reading very inspirational books can be helpful. Listening to teachers that inspire you can be helpful. You know, for me, contemplation and journaling were always incredibly helpful. So stepping into the inspiration, you know, following your heart because you want only truth, therefore your heart's going to take you into the inspiration and going into that inspiration so that you are continually being inspired. And then the other thing that I think is helpful if you want only truth is to notice how everything else that you think you want and that you go after doesn't actually satisfy you. You know, just keep noticing that, you know, like, you know, notice that you really wanted to move into this new house and, you know, you did everything you could to get a better job, to get the money, and finally you got into the house and you really liked the house for a time, but then after a time you notice there's more rooms to clean now. You know, I mean, after a time it wasn't satisfying and you started wanting something else. And just notice that, observe that. Observe that nothing else is really satisfying you. You know, Ellie did talk about how some people are born only wanting the truth. And I don't remember now what she said. Maybe she said 1%, maybe she said 3%. I don't remember, but a very small percentage of people are born only wanting the truth. And I think that we're aware of some of these people. You know, if we take Ramana Maharshi, for example, you know, I mean, at age 17, he had a realization of truth and then spent like the next 11 years or so in meditation. I mean, he wanted only that, right? If we look at Michael Langford, if you read his autobiography, Manonasa, at age 17, he was living with his girlfriend who was 18. And somehow he got his hands on a Ramana Maharshi book. And once he read that book, he decided that it takes time. You have to spend time with a girlfriend. And he didn't want to spend time with a girlfriend. He wanted to spend all of his time on the search for truth. So he broke up with his girlfriend and he never had another girlfriend. And he never really had any social friendships at all for his entire life, because he only wanted truth. So these are people who are born only wanting truth and nothing else interests them, right? They're not interested in the relationships and the goals that the other people in the world are interested in. Ellie also said there's another percentage of people, and again, I don't remember if she said 3% or 5%. I think it might have been that range, 3 to 5%. They're born experience seekers. They're born wanting things in the world, but in their lifetime that changes. In the lifetime they change from wanting things in the world to wanting only truth. Well, I would say that if you find it in your heart that you want only truth, that you might be in that 3 to 5%, right? The ones that are changing from the experience seeker to the one who wants only truth. And so wanting to want only truth, I think, is also valid. It's a transition, and it's very, very valid. And so you want to honor the fact that you want only truth. You know, maybe it's not genuine that you want only truth, but it is genuine that you want only truth, not out of guilt, not out of thinking that those who want only truth are better, but just because it's a genuine desire in you. And so if you want only truth, follow the inspiration and then also notice how the other things don't satisfy. All right, Ken, the mic is yours.
She came to from Iran today, for his education, and she found me and we interact. This is about almost like 3.5 years ago. He woke up only 23 years old. Never done any meditation, never done any practices, never. Just when she called me, she says, just help me to know who I am. I don't know who I am. Help me out. This is an authentic question. All she wants to know what this is. Okay? This is all. And you don't get that. Out of thousands of people you contact, there's only one. You know, you ask a typical person. I ask my family, my mom, the people that are so close to me. I asked my mom one time. I said, "Did you, when you were a child or when you were young, did you ever have this question of who I am?" She said, "No, never dawned on me."
Well, I was saying, and I think. For me, it was a different question, but you said it's the same question. But the question that burns in me is, the way I would word it is, what is the absolute truth? But what that means is the one truth that's for everyone.
What is the absolute truth? But what is the absolute truth can be also, the root of it has to be who I am.
Yes.
Who am I? The root of it. Because absolute truth and you are not two, they're one.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
But according to the mind,
All right. So, you know, it's interesting what she's saying, that just wanting to know what is the absolute truth, what is the truth, that by itself that's not enough. Although I can honestly say that has been the driving question for me ever since I can remember, ever since I was probably around 12 or 13 years old, you know, off and on, because I would also step away from it for years and then return to it. But I can also see how at first, when I was seeking the truth, I was looking out. You know, when I was seeking the truth at first, I was seeking somebody out, you know, like the right religion, you know, somebody out there who knew the truth and I could learn it from them. So it was an outward seeking effort. It became a focused inward seeking effort when it became combined with who am I? Who am I is the question that drives deeply inward. So when you combine what is the truth with who am I, then you're very clear on which direction to look, or at least that's how it appears to me. What is the truth and who am I, the direction they point inwards, if you really understand those questions. All right, Ken, the mic is yours.
Who likes to know what is the truth? Mine is very curious. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Mind wants to know everything. Okay? What is this? What is that? It investigates and then, but mind is also interested, can also be interested in what is true. But what I'm talking about is, what is the truth and who am I? Mm-hmm. That is, this combination is a very potent.
Yes.
My question was always, who am I? Because when I was alone, there was always empty. I felt myself as empty. Okay? That scared me. Because I was not awake. You see? I was feeling this emptiness, space. I felt myself as a space. But it was scary. Because my mind was not trained, my mind was not mature to capture the truth in the midst of the space. It's not, here is not just the space, it's not empty, it's full. But my mind was not mature enough to see the fullness. Until I grew up and then I went to this path. Once I trained the mind, as with meditation again, and contemplation, the mind was able to see in the midst of this emptiness what is the real. Not only see it, but
Yeah, you know, sometimes, I mean, the words sound crazy to say, you know, in this emptiness, there is fullness. And, you know, that doesn't even make sense if we're just listening at the level of the intellect. It doesn't even make sense. I remember when I used to think that all non-dual teachers, all they were doing was speaking nonsense because they would say silly sentences like that. But that emptiness or that no-thingness that is what we are is everything. And without it, there would be nothing. You know, there would be absolutely nothing. Nothing could exist without the life awareness that we are. It is the foundation of everything. And so when you are looking, and yet it is nothing, right? I mean, it is the space that encompasses all things. And so I think that if you only think about it, if you only have the concepts, if you only have the words, they either don't make sense or they sound frightening or they don't sound at all desirable. But if you take the time to go into awareness, watching awareness meditation, or as she calls it, putting attention on the watcher, if you take the time to go in and start noticing and start paying attention to it, there's a sense, I'm going to call it an intuitive sense, of how important or how valuable this is. And then even though it is no thing, it is also everything. But the only way to get that sense is to take the time to go and pay attention to it. I love the way Michael Langford describes both awareness, watching awareness, and the loving consciousness method of meditation. He talks about how what you want to do is you want to watch awareness, you know, like you're new in a romantic relationship and you're watching your lover. And you don't know your new lover yet, but you want very, very much to know this new lover. And so you watch this lover. You pay close attention to this lover. And I know some people who pay very, very close attention. I mean, they know, you know, every little mannerism that their loved one makes, and they can imitate their loved one because they've just watched them so closely. Now, I've never been that detail oriented, but there are even people who love me, not in a romantic way, but Jasmine and Danielle have watched me that much, and they can just imitate me to a T, and it just makes me laugh and laugh and laugh. But they've watched me so carefully, right? They've just, you know, really paid attention to me. And so this is what we want to do. We want to go into awareness, watching awareness meditation, and pay attention to awareness as if it's our new love, and that we really, really want to get to know this one. And as we pay attention with that type of interest, this is how we come to know it for what it is. Ken, the mic is yours.
Capture and identify that. Capture the true identity. If that one itself happened, but it's not accidental happen, because I was after this, I was seeking for this. All my life I was seeking. See? So, you know, again, for those people who have that, this background, I have good news. You're going to wake up. Because if somebody points out to you, you know, what I do with people, I do some, we go deep meditation together. And then, we, like, metaphorically, we got in. And I start asking questions. I say, okay, in this midst of this emptiness, what it is, what do you see? They should be, and then, you know, I just keep asking questions, and then they would see what they see. And then, in that point, the guru is very valuable. The guru helps you to grab it, not to let go of it anymore, to just identify it. Yeah, just grab and identify with what is the truth in you.
Yeah, you know, I think that this is one of the values of contemplating, you know, properly selected quotes. You know, like Michael Langford gives us these wonderful books like The Seven Steps to Awakening, The Importance of Practice and Effort, How to Practice Self-Inquiry. What I find as I read these books and contemplate these quotes is that these books are like the guru who is really pointing to the truth in a very, very clear way. And so if I am actually practicing awareness, watching awareness, not just talking about it, but taking my time, going in and actually practicing it, and I've contemplated these quotes and read these quotes over and over again, what happens is I know what I'm looking at, because they have pointed. I don't know for sure. I suppose it's possible, because I don't think Ramana Maharshi read many pointings, although he did read one book prior to his awakening, so that one book may have really helped him. It may have had just the right pointings in it. But I'm not certain that most of us would recognize the truth without the help of one who already knew what it was, and that was telling us, giving us those pointers, so that when we go in and we see it, that we recognize it. And so I think this is why, you know, you'll hear often from some people that a guru is absolutely necessary. But the guru, I don't think that means that you have to, although you might, but I don't think that means that you have to get someone like Elie Ruzdahr or Michael Langford or Eckhart Tolle or Adi Ashanti to pay personal attention to you. I don't think you're left out in the cold if a physical guru is not provided, because we do have so many great pointings in books. And we do have so many great pointings in video. So I feel like the guru is provided. It really is. It's just a matter of, are we paying attention to it? But it is very, very helpful to listen to ones or to contemplate ones who have already realized this truth and really contemplate what they're saying, and then go in and do the practice, because then when the experience comes to you, you recognize it thanks to their pointing. In fact, Dr. David Hawkins, when he talks about his experience of walking through the final doorway, which is where he dropped the ego, he talks about how these things that his guru or the gurus he had been exposed to had said, and how all of those things came into his mind to help him through that experience. So in this way, our teachers, in whatever form our teachers show up, they're very important, and we really need to pay attention to them. And even if they're saying something that we don't understand, at the time that we need it, the understanding will be provided. Suddenly we'll understand what that always meant, right? All right, Ken, the mic is yours.
Okay, and then when you come back to meditation, you talk to me as the source, not as a person anymore. Because clarified down, it's right there and there that this person doesn't exist, never existed. Never existed. You clarify that. It's that you see it, not I am telling you.
I understand.
You have to be able to see it opening up, opening your it, that metaphorically. Inner eyes open, metaphorically I'm talking about. There is no inner eye.
Yes.
That inner not seeing all of a sudden invoke. I would help that inner seeing to invoke. So you can, okay? Then once you see, there is no way you can fall back to see. If you wake up correctly to who you are, there is no I am in and out, coming up. No. This is not awakening. I'm sorry. This is not, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry. When you wake up, you wake up.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before, but I just want to say this again because it never hurts to repeat things. That, you know, I agree that is not awakening, right? The wavering in and out of some type of experience, you know, wavering in and out of, you know, one moment, you know, you're aware that you're awareness and you're detached, but then another time you forget you're a person again and you're upset. That is not awakening. And I agree with her completely on that. But, again, I think sometimes people hear things like this and they hear something that she's not saying, which is, that means you're unworthy. I think that these processes of wavering in and out can be a part of what's happening as we're moving towards awakening. But awakening has not yet occurred, because when awakening occurs, what she's saying is it's solid and it's final and there's no going back. So, and you know, NTI talks about both of those things. NTI talks about, in NTI Hebrews, it talks about during the awakening process, there may be this experience of like opening your eyes and then falling back to sleep and then opening your eyes and then falling back to sleep. And it says that, you know, that's what we sometimes do just every morning. You know, if you don't have to set an alarm and get up at a certain time, you know, you might wake up a little bit and then go back to sleep and wake up a little bit and go back to sleep a little bit, you know. But that is the awakening process, right? You are waking up as you're doing that dozing. Whether it lasts 15 minutes, half an hour, an hour, you're still waking up. And eventually what's going to happen is you're going to wake up for the day and you're going to get up and you're not going to, that dozing is going to stop, right? Well, the same thing happens in the awakening process for some of us. There's this experience of kind of awakening and then going back to sleep and then kind of awakening and then going back to sleep. So the process is engaged, but we're not yet awake. All right, Ken.
Just like in life, you switch on or off. Either you're on or off. In between, you don't have in between. You cannot say 1 minute I am on, 1 minute I'm off. And you will never go off. There is no way you can go off. How could you go off? Even if you try to go off, you can't go off. This doesn't go off. This is always here.
Yeah, I said a moment ago, NTI says both of those things, then I only talked about the one, the process of, you know, when you're in the process of awakening, there may be this apparent, what looks like waking up and falling back to sleep and waking up and falling back to sleep, but actually, you know, you're not awake yet. That's the process. The other thing that NTI says is once you wake up, there will be no going back to sleep. It says, once you know the truth, you will know that illusion is not a substitute for truth, and you will not go back. So NTI says these same things that Eli Ruzdar is saying right now. All right, Ken.
Always, ever present, self-shining, unconcerned. And so simple, so here, so obvious. It is so obvious. Sometimes because something is so obvious, people can go blind completely.
Right. I was just reminded of something I think you said to Rick Archer when you were talking about maturity, and you had the story of if you had like a young boy, I don't know if you said 4 or 7 or what, that you had a huge diamond in one hand and an ice cream cone in the other. Do you want to finish telling your own story or do you want me to tell it?
No, you say it.
All right. The young boy, he wouldn't understand the value of the diamond, so he would want the ice cream. But then, you know, metaphorically speaking, if you have an older person, maybe 35, 42, someone who has grown and has come to understand the value of the diamond, and you make the same offer, that person would easily take the diamond. And that I'm understanding is the difference between the mature and the immature mind. In fact, the immature mind is still going to seek the objects.
Yes. And the feelings and the experience.
Yes.
And they think that it has to be a specific state of mind I should have. That my mind has to swell down, nothing should come and go in the mind. Or my emotion has to be always, I'm always in peace. That's not freedom. Freedom is you're free from all that. Not try to make any specific state of mind or emotion and a feeling. It's not like that. It doesn't matter anymore what the emotion, the sensation, or whatever is happening in the body. It doesn't matter. This body can get sick any moment.
Yeah, it's interesting what she's saying now, you know, that it doesn't matter what happens in the body once you're awake because you know that you're not the body. For example, this body can get sick at any moment, right? And that doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter when you know you're not the body. You know, she says, you know, that the body may get angry. And that doesn't matter. And, you know, these types of things are the types of things. In fact, Adele has also asked a question. These types of things are the types of things that different people have different answers to. You know, like, you know, Elie Ruzdar may say, oh, the body may still get angry, but it doesn't matter. However, A Course in Miracles, Jesus says there's no justification for anger. You know, Adele has just asked the question, is there continuing revelation after waking up? Well, some people say yes, but others do not comment on it. And, you know, what we don't know for sure is the people that are saying there's continuing revelation, have they just not reached the point of awakening where that revelation stops? Or is there a continuing revelation? What we don't know for sure is the people who say, well, you still get angry even though you're still awake. Does that mean that they have not yet reached the point, the purification, where the anger stops? Or is that true? And, you know, we can talk about these things forever. Because some people say one thing and some people say another. And my humble opinion on these types of things is that it's helpful not to form a belief, not to pick a side, to realize I don't know, and to move towards awakening in the way that I know how, which for me right now is practicing the awareness, watching awareness. You know, lots of people used to come to Ramana Maharshi with these types of questions, and he didn't really answer the question directly. He would just say, you know, first, you know, focus on waking up, you know, practice self-inquiry, focus on realizing the true self. And then you will know the answers. That was his answer consistently. And I feel, rather than getting caught into a belief system about what awakening is and what one's experience in an awakening, it's better to just engage in the practice that awakens and find out for myself. In fact, one thing that NTI says is, basically, what do you expect from awakening? And then it goes on to say, whatever you expect from awakening is going to be your stumbling block. And it asks you to let go of your expectations. And it's interesting because it doesn't say trade in your expectations for another expectation. So, you know, you could trade in the expectation that it's always peace and love. Say, okay, I thought it was always peace and love, but maybe you still get angry. That's trading one expectation for another expectation. Or I thought that you would still get angry, but maybe you never do. Maybe it's always peace. That's trading one expectation for another expectation. What NTI recommends is no expectations. I don't know what awakening is, right? That's really what it recommends. And that also is what I always heard Ramana Maharshi say, you know, practice self-inquiry, reach self-realization, and then you will know. So I, you know, that's my personal recommendation there. And Ken, the mic is. Otherwise, again, we'll go back. You know, you just go back and forth. Well, Ellie said this, but Michael said this. You know, well, so-and-so said this, but so-and-so said this. I mean, you know, how are we going to resolve it? We wake up. That's how we resolve it. We find out for ourselves. All right. Ken, the mic is yours.
What does that have to do with me?
I love what you just said.
I know. See that? Yeah. It's just, I know myself as ultimate.
Yes.
Truth that is here. This body is in my presence. It's in my presence right now. I am using the body to be able to talk. The body talks. The body moves. I'm using the body to do that all. But I am not the body for a fact. For a fact.
Yeah.
So the body can drop this moment. What does that have to do with me? Where am I going? Nowhere.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I've often heard people say is that you're not enlightened or you're not awake if the body is sick. That if you were enlightened or awake, the body would be perfectly healthy. And what I hear you saying is the two have nothing to do with each other.
Although you feel it, if the body is sick, you, of course you feel it. You don't become numb or you don't, you know, you feel the body, you feel the pain, you feel whatever, you take care of it. You go to the, any doctor, you take care of it. But you're not going to identify with it. And because there is no identification, then your way of handling it is much more mature, is much more conscious, without any attachment. Because you're not going to have any attachment. You don't have attachment to anything. You drop all your attachment all of a sudden. Nothing sticks to me right now. I mean, right now, as who I am, nothing.
Yeah, of course. Again, as I mentioned, you know, some people say that, you know, when the mind is perfectly healed, the body is also always perfectly healed. And some people, as we just heard Ellie say the two have nothing to do with one another. You know, maybe that's just different karma. Who knows? Who knows? But one thing that Ellie just said that I think is very important, you know, I don't want to get caught up on these things that maybe are just controversies. But one thing that Ellie just said that I think is very important that is not a controversy, she talked about identification. You know, if we are identified with the body, or if we're identified with anything, or if we're identified with people, you know, with the idea of whether people respect me or not. Or if we're identified with, you know, I don't know, what else? You know, identified with, I have to be happy. I have to be peaceful. If we're identified with anything, that thing is going to be a stumbling block for us. That's where ego is going to be still there, and that's where ego is going to be involved. So if we're identified with the body, we're going to have challenges around making decisions because there's going to be fear there. You know, just like if we're identified with our reputation, how we feel people see us, we're going to be challenged sometimes in making decisions because there's going to be fear there. So letting go of identification with is always helpful. I mean, that's always helpful. In the end, I don't know for sure whether the body will get, you know, perfectly healthy or whether it won't. You know, I have witnessed certain things that makes me say sometimes yes, sometimes no. You know, like Peace Pilgrim, you know, says from the time that she had her enlightenment experience, she never even experienced a headache. You know, that body was perfectly healthy for the rest of her life. And then we have like Ramana Maharshi, who the body was not perfectly healthy. So, you know, sometimes yes, sometimes no, it appears. But I think what was true in both cases was there was no identification with the body. You know, I think that's when we're getting down to the heart of the matter. And I think sometimes we get confused on the details because, you know, we think there's some kind of truth in form. And I think probably what's most important for us to pay attention to is the identification. Am I identified with this body? Being identified with a healthy body is the same mistake as being identified with a sick body. Right? Being identified with, my reputation is the same mistake with being identified with the idea that I'm not identified with my reputation. You know what I mean? So that's where we need to look at. Is the me, can I say, I am, this is me. I'm the person who doesn't care what other people think about me. You know, like, is there an identification with that? These are the types of things that I think are really important. And again, this gets back to what I mentioned a moment ago about our expectations of enlightenment. If we have certain expectations of enlightenment, if we look very carefully, we're probably identified with those. And when somebody shows up with an opposite expectation, like if I have the expectation that the body is going to be healthy, and then somebody else shows up and says, oh, that's not true, I might feel a little something in my chest, feel a little, you know, constriction, and or feel I'm right, they're wrong, or I don't like him because he said that. The reason that's happening is because I'm identified, and that's what I need to notice. I've become identified with an idea, and that's an obstacle that needs to be released. So this is what we have to be very careful about, because even on the spiritual path, while we're in the process of letting thoughts be loosened and let go, we also accidentally take on new thoughts. And we identify with those new thoughts. And what we want to do is become what NTI calls the empty shell. And you all, I think, are pretty familiar with A Course in Miracles, Lesson 189, Paragraph 7, where it asks us, basically to forget everything, right? All right, Ken.
Nothing is sticking to me. Nothing.
Yeah, and I can see how any confusion about what to do, all the different choices, all the fears, that would all come from identification. So without the identification, there would be clarity about what to do with whatever illness may arise.
Absolutely. And whatever it arises, you know that you can handle it.
Yeah.
Because what you are is independent from that. You see, liberation is not, it is liberation from all this. Anything can come on my way. It doesn't matter. I am free from it. I wouldn't handle it. It's not that. Anything comes on my way, I would handle it. But I am free from it at the same time.
Yes.
So experiences does not faze me. It doesn't matter anymore what kind of experience. It is what it is.
So now we're kind of going full circle back to what she started to say at the beginning of the talk, where she talked about how most people are experienced seekers. And she said, even on the spiritual path, most people are still just seeking experiences. They want some kind of an experience from awakening, from enlightenment, so maybe they want the experience of always having a healthy body, or maybe they want the experience of always having, no problems, no challenges ever facing them in the world. everything happens easily all the time. And what Ellie recommends, which I think is really difficult for the mind to accept, is that If in order to want truth, you can't be wanting an experience. And this is the same thing as NTI is saying. What are your expectations about awakening? Whatever those are your stumbling blocks. Don't let go of those expectations. And I think this is very difficult for the mind, because when the mind is seeking something, it is seeking something because it thinks it's going to get something out of it. It's just the nature of the mind. And so why would I want awakening, or why would I want enlightenment, if I'm not going to get anything out of it? I mean, that's the mind talking. But the truth seeker that she's talking about, the truth seeker has transcended this, you know, wanting to get. They don't want to get anything. They don't really care whether the body's going to be healthy or not healthy. They don't really care what the experience of awakening is. They just want to know the truth. They just want to know what's true. It's not a bargain. You know, I want to know what's true so that dot, dot, dot. It's just wanting to know the truth. And again, lots of teachers tell us what you get from that truth. But the interesting thing is, they don't agree. Some say it's only bliss. It's only bliss. It's only peace. It's only happiness. And others say, oh, no. No, no. You still get angry. You still get this. You know, maybe one's awake. Maybe one's not. But we don't know. Some say, oh, you know, you'll have a healthy body. You'll always have a healthy body. And others say, no, no, no. And the advantage of that to me, the advantage of that is that that helps us to say, okay, I don't know. I can drop my experience seeking and I can just want to know the truth. I can just want to find out for myself because it's the only way I'm going to find out. And then that creates an inner drive where we start going after the truth only because it's the truth, not for anything else. In fact, I think it's a great advantage that the teachers do not appear to agree. At least for me, it's a great advantage. Because I know I can't find out from them. I have to do this myself. It's the only way to know. And I have to trust myself. How am I going to know what awakening is by listening to a bunch of people who describe it differently? I have to go within. I have to find out for myself. I have to trust myself. This is my journey. And that, when I say those words, my heart just explodes. Like somehow that's right. I know that's right. That this is my journey and I have to do it. I have to find out for myself and it has nothing to do with believing anyone else. And that's extremely motivating. To know that's the only way to find the answer is to go and take the journey myself. It's extremely motivating to then take the journey. And, you know, we often hear teachers express it that, you know, it might be like tasting a peach or tasting a watermelon or tasting, you know, a pineapple. Like you can tell someone what it tastes like, what a peach tastes like or what a watermelon tastes like or what a pineapple tastes like, but they can never learn it from hearing your description. The only way they can find out what one of those fruits tastes like is to bite into it themselves. And that's the same thing with the spiritual journey, especially since the teachers do not appear to agree. Of course, we don't really know who's awake and who's not. We don't even know that. We don't even know if some of them are right and some of them are still kind of deluding themselves. All we can do is take the journey. All right, Ken.
And the rules of the education are all dropped. That this past weekend, it was a Mother's Day, yes. Of course, Mother's Day, kids come in and all that. But deep down, I know what is the other side of the coin. See, I don't forget that. This side of the coin, yes, I play the role of the mother. Of course. There's nothing wrong with that. But I would see the totality, not just one side. Not just the thorn. Just like, for example, if I ask you, in the room that you are right now, most of the people who are ignoring themselves constantly, their attention is on the objects. Okay, there's a chair here, there's a thing here, there's a fan here, there's this computer here. But they don't pay attention to the space that is containing all these objects, first of all. That's very close to you. That space is very, very close to you. But it's not you.
Now again, right now what she's saying I feel is very, very important. And, you know, if we're talking about you have to take this journey yourself, and in order to do that you have to trust yourself, then I have to trust when I feel that what she's saying right now is very, very important. And what she's saying right now, again, is in this room, most people pay attention to the objects. They don't pay attention to the space, although the space is very, very close to you. You know, like I could tell you there's a microphone in front of me, and that microphone is approximately a foot away from my mouth right now. But the space, you know, the space is right there touching my mouth. And in fact, the space is going into my mouth and down, you know, down my throat, right? The space is everywhere. I'm in the space and the space is in me. And how often do I pay attention to the space? And of course, that's what we're doing when we're practicing that awareness watching, awareness meditation, is we are going in and we are removing our attention from the objects and we are paying attention to the space, to the awareness, to the presence, to the isness. And when we pay attention to that, we realize that that is what's intimately us. Just like the microphone is a foot away, but the space is right here. The thoughts we see are, you know, at least an inch away. The thoughts are away. And the body is even away. And the world is away. But I'm what's right here. I'm what's intimately right here. And then pay attention to that. Instead of paying attention to the objects, pay attention to that. That feels important to me. Remember, she said the questions are, what is the truth and who am I? Interestingly, she didn't say the questions are, will I still get angry when I'm awake? Or, will the body be healthy when I'm awake? The questions are, what is the truth and who am I? See, some of these spiritual questions that we ask actually distract us from the truth. In fact, the vast majority of the spiritual questions that we ask actually distract us from the truth. And in the beginning, we all ask questions. There isn't one of us that doesn't. Because we think that the truth is something that you learn, like you learn math or you learn science, right? So we're asking questions because we're trying to learn the truth. But eventually the questions completely fall away. We have no questions. We don't even care about their answers anymore. Because somehow we've realized the questions are all a step away from truth. The questions are all, you know, like this microphone. They're a distance away. And the answers are a distance away. And we don't want anything that's a distance away. We only want what's intimately true. Intimately and consistently true. And we want that, I'm going to say, to pop open. So that the answer takes us over. So that there's never a doubt or a question again. So that it's known beyond all doubt, beyond all question, beyond all confusion. And when that's all that we want, it kind of changes the way we seek. Instead of an outward seeking, it's an inward seeking. Instead of being concerned with the opinions of others, what their, quote, their truth is, you know, it doesn't matter. Leave everyone else to their story. Every single other person can have their story about what truth is. This is something I want to find out for myself as a direct experience, beyond doubt. That's the truth seeker, not seeking anything but truth. All right, Ken.
Okay? You are not this space either. That's another misunderstanding of people. They think that they are this space. The space, you are aware of this space. You are prior to this space. You cannot be this space. So, the recognition of yourself as what you are, as an existence that is here, that is embracing this all.
Yeah, I think what she's talking about here, I can't say that I know for certain, but I think what she's talking about here when she says, and you're not the space, I think what she's referring to, because, you know, different people use different words differently. I mean, you know, and that's something we also cannot escape. So I think when she's saying that you're not the space, I think what she really means is when you get into that totally quiet, still mind, that some people are looking at the total quiet stillness and the thought is, oh, that's what I am. I'm this quiet and this total stillness. And they're not noticing that they're still the one that's looking at that total stillness. So in that way, the spaciousness that is created by the absence of mind becomes a new object. And they're fooled into thinking they're this new spacious object rather than noticing they are that which is looking at the spaciousness. I think other people use the word spaciousness different. They're not referring to that quietness that has been created by the silence of the mind. That's the word they are using for awareness. So people use words differently, and so sometimes we really need to listen beyond the words when we're listening to anyone, or they sound like they're disagreeing, even when they're not. They're just using words differently. All right, Ken.
That is the truth. That's the ultimate origin. And the mind, you know that? The mind that's free. This mind, this poor mind, was constantly looking. Constantly was looking. It's just looking. But the point is that a mature mind knows what it wants. Hmm. How can I say it? It knows. For example, let me make you a simple example. And this is a word example. Let's say you lost your phone. Hmm. Okay? And then you're looking, and I said, I'll show it to you. I'll show you this. I said, is that it? He said, no. That's not it. I'm looking for the phone, right? Is that it?
No, that's not it. That's not what I want.
is that this flower? No, I show you every single thing. You know it's not it.
Yeah.
You know that's not it. But the moment you find this, you say, yes, absolutely this is it. Right? And that's it.
All right, I was in Skype with her, and so I was able to see. So she held up a phone and said, okay, so you lost a phone, and that's what you're looking for. And I don't remember now exactly what she held up, but she might have held up a stapler and said, is that it? I'm like, no, that's not it. And then, you know, she held up something else, maybe a book. Is that it? No, that's not it. And then she holds up a phone, and she goes, is that it? I'm like, yes, that's it, you know, because, I'm supposedly looking for a phone. And, you know, she says, again, that's like the truth seeker or the one with the mature mind, is they know what they're looking for, truth. They're not looking for something that's not truth. And your mind can become very, very discerning. In the beginning, it's not. You know, at least that's my experience. In the beginning of the search for truth, it's not very, very discerning. So, for example, somebody may tell you, a teacher or a book, you know, may tell you that the truth is light. All you'll see is light. Right? That's the truth. And you have this imagination of, you know, the computer turning into light and the desk turning into light. And you think, when I get to where I see only light, then I will have the truth. But at some point you begin to realize anything that has not always been present can't be the truth. Any new experience cannot be the truth. Anything that can end cannot be the truth. You come to realize that the truth has to be something that's always, always, always present. So you're looking for something that's always, always, always present. But again, you're looking for it to pop. To pop, and by pop, again, I mean so that it overtakes you. It overcomes you. You merge into it. You disappear into it. But it's not something new. If it wasn't always here, it can't be the truth. And that becomes very, very obvious. And so once you realize it can't be something, you know, that hasn't always been here, this helps you in your looking. Because then, let's say you're in meditation and some vision comes and you're seeing all of these beings and they're very divine and they're telling you things, right? And it's very interesting, but then you realize that can't be the truth. That's a fantasy that's occurring. It's a fantasy with a divine theme, but it's a fantasy. And so you learn to disregard it. And there are so many things, you know, that I found that, you know, as a new spiritual student, like I said, I took on all of these beliefs. You know, oh, this isn't true about Jesus, what I learned when I was younger. This is true about Jesus, and I think I have the truth because now I know the truth about Jesus. That was just another belief. And at some point you realize, no, none of that's true. And you start letting go of everything, and you're looking for this one thing that you're starting to get a feel for what it is, but you know you have to go deeper into it. You have to go till it pops. Till it overtakes you. All right, Ken.
You speak yourself, right? You're not going to speak anymore once you find it. But if you don't know what you want,
then the thing just runs and runs and runs and runs in a loop.
And I'll show you this. You say, oh, let me see.
I know you used to be a teacher, and you are so good. I mean, you're so good with your examples. They're so clear. That's the teacher.
I was a math teacher. Yeah. Yeah, I was a math teacher. So, this is the thing. In this path, you have to know what you're looking for.
Yes.
What it is that I want, what I'm looking for, so that when I see it, I don't miss it. I don't misunderstand other stuff for what is.
Yes.
See, Rumi, this reminds me of this message of Rumi. It says, در خمها گشادم زه هزار می چشیدم چو شراب سرکش تو به لب و سرم نیامد. It says, in this world, I went to every single jar of wine. I drank from every single of those jars. Tasted different tastes of these wines, variety of them. thousands of them. Thousands of them. But none of them affected on me the way the truth is.
So again, this is a mistake that we all make, but it's okay to be aware of the mistake and to begin stop making it. The mistake that we all make is thinking that other things are truth, things that aren't the truth. You know, so for example, you know, some people think that this is a truth. Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene, and that's the truth. That's not a truth. That's not the truth. That's not the truth. The truth has nothing to do with any story. The truth would be true even if a world had never happened and not a single character had ever happened. Right? The truth is a predecessor to every single story. And so when we're confusing a story for truth, it's because we don't know what we're looking for yet. And that's what she was saying. You know, you have to know what you're looking for in order to recognize it. If you don't know what you're looking for, you're just going to keep seeking and seeking and seeking and seeking. So it's very important to get very clear on what that word truth means. A truth also has to be true for everyone. Everyone. No matter where they were born, when they were born, what their religious beliefs are, what their experiences are, the truth, if it's the truth, it has to be true for Regina. It has to be true for Donald Trump. It has to be true with, what's his name, Kim Jong-un, the head of North Korea. It has to be true for Paul McCartney. You know, it has to be true for Kathy Smith. It has to be true for everyone, or it's not the truth. So you're looking for something that's not only always been here, but it's true for everyone. When you find it, there's no doubt about that. Whether they recognize it or not is a different matter, but it's completely true for everyone. There isn't a single soul that it's not the truth for. All right, Ken.
The only truth makes me
intoxicated.
Intoxicated.
Yes.
And you get intoxicated. You are constantly intoxicated with what is the truth in here.
Well, and you said something a moment ago that dawned on me why the question, what is the truth and who am I, have to go together. Because if you only are saying what is the truth, you could mistake it for something else.
Yeah, because then you would be something like me and the truth. Like
You say it is one constantly. And the eyes are out. The eyes are out a little bit.
Right? Absolutely. Even if somebody says, oh, I know there's an awareness. I know there's awareness here. I recognize it. All of that. This is still duality. You don't know that you are one with it. And the reason you don't know is because you are not mature enough to know. Your mind is not mature enough to recognize this as who you are. And some might say, oh, I'm not qualified. Maybe I'm not qualified to be the ultimate. You know, mind has to be pure. Also, it is full of tricks. It's full of impurity.
Yeah, sorry, something's happened here where I can't, from my perspective, I can't leave the queue, which is like having your hand up. Therefore, I can't put it up again, Ken. So I think I'm just going to have to type the word hand because from my perspective, I'm not able to put it up. I don't know what you're seeing. Oh, shoot. And unfortunately, in all of that, I already forgot what she just said. Are you able to play like the last 45 seconds again?
Yes.
I'll release the mic.
Wives, varieties of them, thousands of them, thousands of them, but none of them affected on me the way the truth is. The only truth made me intoxicated.
Yes.
And you get intoxicated. You are constantly intoxicated with what is the truth in here.
Well, and you said something a moment ago that dawned on me, why the question, what is the truth and who am I, have to go together. Because if you only are saying what is the truth, you could mistake it for something else.
Yeah, because then you would be something like me and the truth. Like
yeah.
You say the duality, you still say the duality constantly.
And the eyes are out. The eyes are out a little bit. Right?
Absolutely. Even if somebody says, oh, I know there's an awareness. I know there's that here. I recognize that. All of that. This is still duality. You don't know that you are one with it. And the reason you don't know is because you are not mature enough to know.
Okay, yeah, that's where I wanted to say, you know, like people say, I know there's awareness, I'm aware of awareness, which we are, many of us are, but there's still a duality there, she says, and my current perception of that is, what that means is I'm actually still identified with the mind. So even when I'm saying, I know there's an awareness, my identity is with the mind, so that although it's a subtle other, the awareness is still a subtle other. The identity is still with the mind. I am aware of awareness, right? The emphasis is on the I, and the awareness is still a subtle other. And I think that this is probably the case for many of us. And so what this would mean, again, is that awareness has not, what I've been saying, popped and taken us over. Right? I'm still identified with the mind. Sure, I'm aware of awareness. Sure, I sit in awareness, watching awareness every day. But the primary identity is still with the mind. The pop has not occurred. It has not consumed that identity, so that there's no duality, right? And I noticed someone is asking, who decides what the truth is? I think each one has to find that answer for themselves. I think that, you know, that's the answer to that. And if we're wrong about what the truth is, our seeking will continue. Maybe that's how we know that we're wrong. Is the seeking mechanism doesn't end, right? When we wake up to the truth, then the seeking mechanism ends. So maybe that's, you know, that's a kind of a hint. All right. Thank you, Ken.
Your mind is not mature enough to recognize this as who you are. And sometimes the mind says, oh, I'm not qualified. Maybe I'm not qualified to be the ultimate. You know, his mind has to be pure. Also, it is full of tricks. It's full of impurity. It's not be able to see. Again, this purity has to be part of you. It's not something that you have to work on it.
I understand.
You can't work on it. You cannot work on yourself. This is not a religion. You know, religion says, okay, do this, be nice, be nice to everybody, kind, you know that, all that. Religion talks about purity, it talks about you know, making this ego, this person ego, a better person. Okay? This path is not about that. It's not about making this person better. It's not like that. This path is about you already are pure and complete. You don't need to do anything to fix yourself. But you have to recognize yourself as that. And that recognition means, again, maturity. And true burning desire to know. True burning desire to die into this light of existence.
So she appears to be saying two things here, and actually if you look at the teachings of Inner Ramana, it also appears to be saying two things. And so we really have to look at these two things, which appear to be opposites. And, you know, I guess this is what people mean by the word paradox. We really have to look at it and notice the subtle difference. On the one hand, you know, she's saying that in order to recognize the truth, you have to be pure. You know, the ego has so many tricks, right? And so you have to have a purity of desire in order to see through the ego's tricks and not be distracted by them. And then on the other hand, she says that you can't make yourself pure. And she says, and then she goes into, it's not about trying to become a better person. So it's almost as if there's a talking about purification in one breath, and then a talking about purification isn't needed in the other breath. And I think the reason for that is because we misunderstand who we are. And that has to be clarified for us. If we think that I am the person, and we think we have to purify the person, we are mistaken. If we realize that I am the truth, which is pure, and I want to seek that truth until it pops, until I awaken. And there may be tricks in the mind that are trying to distract me from that seeking. Then we understand what purification is. Purification is all about learning to see through those tricks, learning not to fall for those tricks, learning to know the difference between the ego and what's taking me into my realization of the truth. That's the purification that we need. You know, we could call it's the purification of seeing with the right mind instead of being confused by the wrong mind. But that's different than trying to make myself a better person. Maybe it's a subtle difference to some people, but it is different. So we don't have to make myself a better person. In fact, somewhere, I can't remember if it was Ramana Maharshi or the Tao Te Ching, it was somewhere it talks about how, you know, the sinner, the person who isn't the better person, the sinner who suddenly decided they wanted to know the truth, in that moment could realize it. You know, like there's no requirement to become a better person first, right? You know, you don't have to become a better person. You just have that purity of desire. And in fact, as you all know from Michael Langford's works, he talks about how when your intense desire for liberation becomes stronger and stronger and stronger, you'll be able to see through the ego's tricks, right? Tricks you could not see through before. So that's the kind of purification that is needed. It's the ability to discern, the ability to know the right direction from the wrong direction. But it has nothing to do with an outward improvement of the person. Although I think sometimes that happens naturally too, because if you're learning not to listen to the ego, not to fall for the ego's tricks, then you aren't acting out some of the things that you used to act out before. So there might appear to be an improving of the person, kind of as an aside, but that's not the goal, that's not the purpose, that's not required. All right, we have 4 minutes left, so let's just listen to it a little bit more.
Yes. I'm certain this will be my last interview. I can't imagine having another one now.
I hope it is helpful for both groups of people. That, again, I put it into the categories. I shouldn't categorize people. But to, in order to see things better, we did that so that you don't get confused again.
Well, I think I hear you. I mean, I feel that I hear you. Again, for anyone who is not ready, it seems to me that if you continue to try to go for something that you just aren't ready for, you're only going to suffer. You're probably continually telling yourself what a loser you are, what a failure you are. That can't add to any happiness. And if I can just use, some words, God is dancing all of us, and if God is dancing some to awaken, beautiful. But if God is dancing some others to dance in a certain way, why not let God dance you the way God wants to dance you? Why fight it?
Absolutely.
And in that, there's no less than.
Because God is fighting. And who is the one who's fighting? The ego.
Ego. So you strengthen the ego, resisting.
Yeah, resisting this dance.
Yes.
Resisting this ignorance. And I think the word of ignorance, I hope it's not a bad word, I know people don't take it wrong. Ignorance means ignoring yourself, breath to breath. That's what it is. And pretending to be this person. People do it all the time. So if you are the ultimate, regardless of whether you know it or not know it, it doesn't matter.
Right.
That knowledge only is valuable for the truth seekers, but it's not valuable for the experience seekers anyway. So why waste your time?
Yeah. You know, in the Bible, one of the Beatitudes that people often have trouble with is where Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." And when I read "Blessed are the poor in spirit," the way that communicated in my mind was, even if you have no idea who you are, even if you have no idea what the truth is, it is still true for you, and so you are still.
Absolutely. Amen. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So set yourself free.
All right, so I think that's a good place to end. And Ken, I know we made a lot more progress tonight, but since you're doing this, I don't know how far we got into the audio, so if you'll let me know. And I will come back to finish that up as needed. what we have on the schedule for this time, which is 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern time, right? 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, both next week and the week after, the first two Sundays in July, is Paul Hederman. So we'll have a Paul Hederman two-week mini-series, and then I will come back and finish up. So 1:13:42. So we still have a little ways to go, right? I think it's, now I'm getting confused. I think it's 120 minutes. Yeah, so we have 20 minutes left. So maybe only one more time, right? We'll see what happens. Okay, so I will come back to finish it up. But we do have Paul Hederman for the next 2 weeks. So please come and listen to Paul Hederman. And thanks for hanging out with me tonight. Goodbye, everyone.